it is Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
And a good Thursday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland, that's me, down here on the south side of town here in Smyrna and Rutherford County. Willie Donick holding fort in East Nashville, where he's been the whole time. I mean, we're coming up on 2 months of this. Chase McCabe out on the west side in Bellevue. Marquise Munson back at 1824 Murfreesboro Pike, which is our Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Gentlemen, how you doing?
It's a beautiful day out there.
It is.
I can tell you that.
It is nice.
Real nice, Clark. Real nice.
Real nice.
Yes. Exactly. I'm feeling good today, boys. I'm ready to
rock.
So
am I. It's Thursday.
Good.
The weather's nice. It's going to be in the 80s this weekend. How could you not?
I feel like the rundown that I do from 9 to 10, that gets my blood going. So I'm ready for 4 hours with you guys. So it gets me awake. I'm all awake now. I'm ready to go.
I heard you guys, the quarantine question of the day, what would you give up to watch live sports right now? I thought about it, and I have, you know, I've got my answer.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Okay.
I would definitely, to get everything back right now, I would definitely give up working out and eating healthy. I would give that up to get sports back. I'm willing to do that for you guys, for myself. I will punish myself. I will stop working out. I will stop trying to eat right, and I will scrap all that just so we can have sports. That's what I'm willing to do. What about
we appreciate your sacrifice.
I'm willing to sacrifice that to get sports back.
But I don't want you to do that, Darren. I don't
Why?
Want you to sacrifice your health.
Well, you have to sacrifice something. That's the point of the question. You have to give up something.
Chase and I don't want to see you come around, you know, eating Cheetos and, you know, coming in all out of shape and, you know, not being able to finish the show. I mean, you know, that's going to be a problem.
Yeah.
We're going to have all these sports to cover. You got to be in shape.
Look, anybody that should not be a hypocrite and come in with radio butt, it's me. I've been preaching, don't get radio butt. And if I come in with radio butt, you guys will know the only reason I've got radio butt is for the sacrifices of mankind to watch sports, live sports.
Yeah, but look.
You'll understand.
Here's the thing. You know, after yesterday.
Oh, wow. We got breaking news.
Is it legit breaking news that?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah.
I was going to make a joke and make fun
of it. No, hold on to the joke. Don't lose the joke.
Okay.
This better be funny. Now we've got a build up to it.
Yeah, that was a build up.
Marquise, do we have a breaking news sounder? And it's just because we really enjoy our conversations with him, and he's in the state. Steve Forbes is no longer at ETSU.
Wow.
And by the way, Willie, you were on the road. This is when all this was hitting. Chase and I were out at Kroger in Franklin when we had Steve Forbes on, and he was great. I'm sure you remember our conversation with
sure.
Steve Forbes. Very charismatic, full of personality. He has taken the Wake Forest job. He is
good
a really good coach, a really good coach. Wake Forest has got themselves a good hire.
Well, I think Steve Forbes would have been a coach in a Power 5 league long before had it not been for the Bruce Pearl fallout at
yes.
Tennessee. He was
Agreed.
Caught in the web of
yep.
that.
Agreed.
And that set him back a couple of years. But that's a great story for him to have to start over and work his way back up to this point. I mean, big salute to him. And Wake Forest has gotten a really good coach. That's an intriguing hire because Wake Forest has been a program that has not had
a
whole lot of success in a while.
Yep. It is. In fact, the last time Wake Forest was good at basketball, I was playing video games. That's how I remember. I was playing NCAA because I used to be Wake Forest. That's how long it's
Why
been.
Why were
since
you Wake Forest? Oh, because in basketball?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That makes
That's
sense.
Back when they were good. That's how long it's been.
Well, I'm trying to think.
Missed
you know,
games.
since the days of Tim Duncan, which were pretty
Tim
special
Duncan
days.
And the guard. I'm drawing blanks. Who was the guard?
Randolph Childress.
Randolph Childress is who I loved being in that video game.
Yeah, and so that, you know, obviously that those teams were outstanding. So we're talking mid-90s. Dave Odom, the coach of that team, ended up replacing Coach Eddie Fogler at South Carolina a few years after that, leaving Wake Forest. But really since then, I mean, since 2000, you could probably count on one hand how many good teams. Now, Chris Paul was at Wake Forest. Those were some good teams, but obviously that was the era where how many years did Chris Paul play at Wake Forest? Two?
Two. I was going to say two. That was my initial thought. Was
but
two.
They just have not had a long run of success in a good while.
Yeah, it was not. I was not playing when Chris Paul was there. It was definitely Childress and Duncan. Let's see, Chris Paul. How long was he at?
He was there two seasons. He left his sophomore year.
So okay, we were right. Okay. I was just going to look it up to be for sure. It felt like 2 years was the right answer. Okay. Yeah. But that's a good hire. Good for Steve Forbes. We got to get him on. Tell him congrats.
Yeah, let's do it.
Hopefully he's got the time for us.
Oh, I'm sure he does.
I know. I'm kidding. That was a joke. Now, speaking of jokes.
Well, I
Chase,
was.
Back to Chase.
Back to you. Our joke correspondent. What I was going to say.
For somebody
did this
just.
Work? Did
just
this joke go well?
You're right. Why did Darren just call Chase a joke? For nobody.
No, I want to know first. Did the joke go over well during the 9 o'clock hour?
Well, I didn't use the joke in the 9 o'clock
hour. Okay, so you haven't even. Okay, you saved the joke for the 10 o'clock hour.
He saved it for
that's
the primetime show.
Hey,
yep.
And look, I'll say this. There are people that have called me a joke, and the joke's on them because I'm still here. So there you go.
Wow, look at that. Little gut shot.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Nice.
No, what I was going to say is you, Darren, have preached the whole radio butt thing, and you have. That's been a very consistent message out of you over the years. But after the ending of yesterday's show where Willie Donick basically says, yeah, you know, guys, I mean, I'm fine losing to Austin Rivers. And, you know, it's you don't have to win. Like, we gave it a good run. Like, don't vote for me. I mean, I don't even know what to believe anymore. So that's just if you want to get radio butts so we get sports back, then fine. I mean, Willie's going to run second to Austin Rivers. I just it's whatever at this point.
I got to be honest. That's probably another reason I've got a little pep in my step. I feel like yesterday's show ended on such a downer. I feel like I'm compelled to lift us up from just that, just hitting the wall head first on the way out the door yesterday with Willie's, it's a good run. I got no chance, so I don't even know why I'm showing up. I don't even know why. Let's just create a movie. Let's turn on the sprinklers. Let's just call this game. Come on. No need to even play it. It's ridiculous. Congratulations, Austin. I know it was such a downer. I just feel like it's time to pick this thing back up. Yeah,
it would be like Phil Mickelson walking out on the 16th green at Augusta when he and Tiger are tied, and he just hands Tiger the green jacket. Like, here you go. You're gonna win anyway. Here you go. Just
look,
take it.
I'm not worthy. You take it. I would never replay that audio. What Willie said at the end of the show to our next guest coming up, because he would hang up on us.
Oh.
He wouldn't even do the interview.
Oh,
if he heard the defeatist attitude of one of the hosts on this show, he would just hang up the phone. Terry would never tolerate that.
Yeah, he would not. And look, knowing your makeup, Darren, I'm sure you hurt hearing that. That doesn't work for you. That's a loser attitude in your mind.
As I tweeted out yesterday, I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
That was great, by the way.
The old disappointed word.
We're all feisty today. Do you use that with Maddox? Do you say, I'm not mad, I'm just
disappointed? I use everything with Maddox. I try to pull out every trick I've got. I'll run out eventually, and then he's just going to just walk away from me. But he's 8, so I've still got some tricks left, but I'll run out eventually. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we've been the big thing that's happened here, quarantine. One, you know, I've discovered kids in this neighborhood. We've been here 12 years. I've never seen them before, and all of a sudden they're here at the, you know, they're here in front of our, in my driveway, on the front porch, ringing the doorbell. I've never even seen before, asking for Maddox, and I'm like, where did these kids come from? You know, it's because now they're all playing together. But the thing that's come out of this, and I even told Lauren this the other night, is like, I'm going to come out, I'm going to come out of quarantine being the jerk in the neighborhood. I just know it. Even though I've got the right to say what they're all riding their bikes now. That's the thing, right? And I've said, look, we live on a cul-de-sac. We got tons of – it's nice. We got joining cul-de-sacs. It's great. They've got a great place. You guys both know the setup, my house. Two joining cul-de-sacs. That's how big their street is. And there's not a lot of traffic here. So it's great for kids to ride their bikes, and they can use all the driveways. But I've been real strict about them riding through yards, and especially ours, but any yard. Like Maddox knows, like – preached him, stop riding through people's yards, man. It's don't do it. You've got streets, you've got driveways. Do not go through people's yards. I mean, I don't want our yard looking like a bike track when we're done with quarantine time, right? I don't want tracks. I got dogs in the backyard that already do that. I already know they're running paths in the backyard. I don't want that in the front. And so that has been like the constant fight, is keeping the neighbor kids from riding their bikes in our yard. And him from riding the bikes, his bike, I caught him yesterday, and his excuse was, well, everybody else was doing it. And, of course, prompted quite the speech. You know, he learned probably never to say that again.
Did you say if everybody jumped off a bridge, would you follow them?
Because that's the go-to line, right? That's the one that everybody has said a million times over the years. I didn't say that. I chose to go down a different path using the same analogies, right? I mean, so you're just a follower. You know, you're not a leader. You know the rules, so you're just going to do what the pack does, and you know, just stuff like that. And trying to teach him, like, you're responsible for you. I don't care if they ride in other people's yards. You're not to ride in other people's yards. Period. Be better than them.
Yeah, we're not talking about them.
Right, we're not talking about them. That's exactly what I always say all the time. We're not talking about them. This is about you. Don't deflect it to them. So I don't know how we got into story time with Dad, but
I feel like I've even heard this speech before.
Willie's like, oh, man, I've been through all that. Old news. Boring. Already been there. Although you never had to experience quarantine time with the kids at 8.
No. I'll tell you what. I think about that for a lot of parents of kids that age, especially households of 2 or 3 kids that age. Boy, that's tough. You know, moving, the energy, you know, you can't go see your friends, you can't get a big play group going. You know, that takes some hardcore parenting right there.
Yeah, it's a whole
two teenagers, it's a little bit easier.
Yeah, because what are they? Are they kind of, do they keep to themselves? Are they on their phone?
They're pretty independent. Yeah.
They're doing TikTok dances.
Yeah, well, Maddox has been doing that, too.
A little
bit,
yeah.
Yeah.
I like the TikTok dances coming out of the Donick household. Those have been good.
Yeah, you guys have slowed down a little bit on that.
Yeah, my daughter, she's – no, not at all. But no. My daughter, she just doesn't want to do it anymore.
Really? She did seem a little uncomfortable in the videos I've watched.
No, well, she was front center, but the problem is she gets a certain faction of her friends give her a hard time. Like, with your parents, you know, like – like, those guys,
peer
pressure. Don't listen to them.
Oh, peer pressure. Well, it's okay. That created a little time for you to you know, talk to Evie about that, right? Don't listen to them. We're your family.
What a family.
Know, just, you, have the to, family. You have to have the teenage mind, you know, like parents aren't always cool.
They're not cool.
It's like, what do you mean? You know, they don't think we're cool? What's up with that? Surely they know we're cool.
And how does she answer that?
Cringe.
All right, we will come back and hope that Terry Crisp did not hear the way the show ended yesterday. We're not even going to bring it up.
I sent you guys a video you guys will enjoy for the break.
Oh, okay. All right, we'll come back with Crispy. On the other side, Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We thought here on this Thursday it was time to bring a Hall of Famer onto the show. Why not? Let's start the show off with a bang. Let's do that. Let's bring in what's soon to be a newest member of Tennessee Sports Hall of Fame, Terry Crisp. Crispy is on the line. Terry, how you doing?
Good morning, gentlemen. I can see with that introduction, you guys are going stir crazy. It's got to you.
No, we're asking for money. We're asking for a loan.
You're losing it. You're losing it, guys.
Look, you know how it works. Butter them up. There's something we're going to be asking for, right?
Oh, yeah. Here it comes. It's coming.
I've got to be honest. I don't know if you've seen what I tweeted out the other night. I included you on Twitter. I don't know how active if you look at that stuff. But I am going through the channels looking for something. I stumble upon NBC Sports Network, and lo and behold, they are showing, let's go back to 1974, Stanley Cup Final, Game 6. I'm sitting there, I'm like, oh, wow, Flyers and Bruins, cool. And I was more intrigued at the moment. My first thought was just, look how these – look at the uniforms, look at the padding or lack of, no helmets, just how the game was played back then. And then I immediately went, wait a minute, that's right. Crispy's on that team, and it was it 2 minutes later, they go up to a bench shot, and there's Terry Crisp. I don't know if you were delivering a speech, if you were yelling at somebody, Crispy, but it was fantastic.
Probably a little of both when you Sheila and I got a call from David Beauclair. We didn't realize it was on either. We watched with the last 6-7 minutes of it. Sheila and I were laughing, and it was, when that came on, she said, "Were you yapping again?" I said, "Well, Brady and I talked quite a bit on the bench because, if you want to get a lot of ice time, you got to do something. You got to talk to somebody." And at that given time, we were discussing late in the game. I was at least voicing my opinion, solicited or not, as to what should happen. And then Brady, the last time he bent over and whispered in my ear was, he says, "Bobby Orr is coming out of the penalty box," and he says, "He's your man." Well, you ever see your life flash before your eyes? You're winning 1-0. And Bobby Orr is coming out of the penalty box, and the coach says, "He's yours." So he put me on the ice. I think I was on for the last minute and 15 or whatever. But I'll tell you one thing. While I was on the ice, I had no idea where the puck was. I had no idea where the players were. But I sure as heck knew where the penalty box was and where Bobby Orr was sitting. And knowing when that shoot opened up, it was like a rodeo going to happen. The bull was coming out of the pen, and the bull was mine. Ay, ay, ay.
It was your job to lasso him, right?
Yeah. Everybody says they're happy when it is. I was the happiest guy in the hockey world when that buzzer went.
What is that like, Terry? You went through it multiple times. You went through it as a player and a coach. But those final seconds and to know – you've done it all. You've crossed the finish line. What is that like? And what are those final seconds like before you get to zero?
You don't even realize it. You're watching the clock. You're watching the play, depending whether you're the coach or the player or whatever. And if you're winning, you're always thinking, depending on the lead you have, the 1-0, is that other shoe going to drop? Is this going to be a fluke goal, going to kill us? Or are we going to hang on, get another one? These are all flashing through your mind. And if you're the leader, you think that somebody's fooling around with the clock in the penalty box, slowing it down. And if you're the guy behind, you're thinking, hey, that guy over there has got his finger on a fast motion thing, and that clock's going too fast. So depending on whose bull's getting gored, and you're watching that clock, believe me, you are watching and waiting for it, whether you're winning or losing on it. And then when the final buzzer, especially that game, we were the first expansion team to ever win the Stanley Cup, the Flyers, that given year. And, the first thing that goes through your mind is, remember I've told you this before, I can always remember my first game in the NHL. And I always said my first game was one of the greatest because I could say to my parents, for all they'd put into it, their efforts and their practice time and travel, is I played one game in the NHL. Then you get greedy and you want a little more, you want another game. But when the final buzzer goes and you've won the Stanley Cup for the first time, and knowing how hard it is to win it, and will you ever get another crack at it, and that goes through your mind again, the pinnacle of. And when that buzzer went that time, I went down and was heading towards where Sheila, my wife, and my mom and dad and some other relatives were sitting at the far end of the rink. I went down there. That just happened where the puck was. And the linesman had the puck. So if you watch, you'll see me get the puck from the linesman, which I still have the puck.
Oh, wow.
But I was giving Sheila and them the thumbs up sign, meaning we did it together. We made the pinnacle. We've arrived at the top of the mountain together. And I was so happy for them and me. And by the time that all happened, I couldn't get back near the cup. If you saw the aftermath, the fans on the ice,
how crazy was that?
Did you stay? That was crazy.
Yes.
I mean, that was literally crazy. Try that today and you'd club to death. You'd be in jail for it. Unbelievable.
I mean,
and the funniest thing is, guys, and if you ever get a chance to watch it, and I didn't even notice it until my grandchildren, our grandchildren, said, "Hey, Coach, who was that kid in the line with you shaking hands at the Boston Bruins?" I said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "Go back, look at that." So I bounced. Pete Weber probably found it for me. He said, "Here was this kid in our line walking along with us, shaking hands with the Boston Bruins with a bottle of champagne." To this day, we have no clue who the kid was. None.
Oh, my gosh. And that guy's been telling that story his entire life.
I'm telling you, he can because it's so plain. You can see his face. You can see everything. And he can say, "Yep, I was there shaking hands with Bobby Orr, Phil Esposito, all the boys."
Well, I mean, could you imagine today if what happened with you guys? If that happened today, what in the world the reaction would be?
I don't know because none of us noticed. I mean, we're all caught up in the euphoria, you know?
Right.
And then to go back and look at that and see it, and, oh, then we never even got a chance like to skate the puck around. You can see Bobby Clark and Bernie Perrant carrying the puck, trying to move with it. Hell, they had problems just getting off the ice into the dressing room with it. And then after that, and I heard Bernie Perrant being interviewed about this, and I realized what he was talking about. It, our dressing room was packed with people. Couldn't move. Like, I don't know who they were, where they come from, how they got in there. But you take away all the relatives and all the wives. It was like a free-for-all. Nobody, there was no guard. It was just, hey, everybody celebrate. Let's go. It's on.
You know, Terry Crisp on the line with us, you bringing that up when watching that, because I did not remember that, obviously, at all, until seeing that play out. The first thing I thought of was the Hank Aaron home run, right? I mean, we see that clip over and over again, and, you know, what do we see? We see fans out on the field running the bases with him, shaking his hand.
Well, he's not even finished yet.
They're not waiting at home plate. They're running the base with him, shaking his hand.
Think what you just said there, that those guys that did that, they'll have that always on film the rest of it, tell their children or grandchildren, "Yep, that's me right there. I'm running alongside him. See us rounding the base? That's me." They said, and they'll ask, "How did you get there?" "I don't know. I don't know how I got there. I just got there."
We have Elliot Friedman on every Thursday at 1 o'clock, and last week I don't even know how we were kind of wrapping up with this, but Elliot was just kind of – we were just kind of maybe reflecting at this market and, gosh, can't believe it's been 22 years and where it was then and where it is today. And Elliot, I'll give him credit because we obviously jumped right in there and said, you are 100% correct, and you should always tell people that because it's true. But, you know, we were talking about how this market – where it is today, you can't tell the story without including you and Pete, because you guys were a big part of kind of bringing this market along and teaching a lot of bozos like me and Willie and a cast of thousands that never grew up with it, were never around it, didn't play it, you know, what this sport was all about. And so what about you? I know you've told the story of how you got here and you did the games with Pete, Jerry Helper, and you were done, and it's a great story if people haven't heard it. But what about those early days? And we were joking with Elliot about the media skate that Barry Trotz and Brent Peterson did for us jokers, and they put us through like a practice, and one of the hotshot media members who could skate got hurt because he was showing off and ran into the pipes and had to be carted off the ice. So they never did that again, Crispy. I think that was in 1998. They never did it. They did it one time, and that was it. But
yeah.
What was that like for you guys to not only step away from the television and radio booth, and when there wasn't games, be out in the community and talking with people?
It was awesome. You know what? It was for Pete and I and Jerry Helper and our former people who were there helping us. It was just fun for us because – two areas. We knew we had to do it. We had to make the market and get to talk to people. And secondly, for us, it was fun just to try and teach, like, what's an offside and what's an icing and what's it checking? And Pete and I, we would, 1 year we did the caravan. And you've heard me tell this story real quickly. We were way down somewhere, I have nowhere, a little town, Podunky Town, and we were meeting people at the Dairy Queen, and we were coming, and then we got to the Dairy Queen, and there was four people there, and we get off the bus and walked in with our stuff on and our pens and everything, but we went to the crowd before. They looked at us and said, oh, you guys know. We thought the Titans were coming. So, and out the door they go. Pete and I had a Dairy Queen. Pete and I had a Dairy Queen, talked to each other, go back in the bus, and away we went. But I think the best part was that when we used to hold, if you, and Willie, you guys would know that tower at the Bridgestone up there, that where they have the radio highway 101 or whatever it is now.
Right.
We used to hold, there was a conference room up there, and I remember our first few sessions. One time we had 8 people, or maybe 10. And if there was 10 people there, 7 of them were ladies interested in hockey. And Pete and I learned early that, you know what, if this is going to go, the ladies are going to make this go. They're going to be a big part of our success here because they're the ones interested. They're the ones going to bring the husbands and brothers, et cetera. And I'll tell you right now, lo and behold, to this day, our best fans are the lady fans, the most avid, the most loyal. Hey, nothing against you guys out there. Don't get excited and get your drawers in a knot. But the women are avid fans, and we learned that early.
Talking to Terry Crisp, telling a little story here and there, and, of course, he'll be going into the Tennessee Sports Hall of Fame. Crispy, just sort of connecting what Darren was asking you about, there was, you know, you had, along with Pete, you had to have that personal touch to be able to make a connection with the fans, almost, you know, one by one. And over time, you know, the numbers continued to grow. But that's one thing I learned about your teams in Philadelphia. There was a really special relationship that you guys had with the fans. So it probably wasn't as strange to you that they were all in your locker room on the ice after the game, because you were sort of on the level with the fans a lot. That's a big part of that story, isn't it?
Yeah, they were. You know what? When we walked out of the dressing room after every game, we were right with the fans. I mean, we walked 2 feet from them, and win or lose, they either loved us, hated us, whatever. But you know, the Flyer fans, they were loyal, but they were, you had to win for them. They wanted winning. But you could stop and talk and meet the kids and talk to the wife or whoever it was going along and on your way to your car. And that was a big part of it. And to me, growing our game that way was St. Louis, the same way when we were originals in St. Louis on the island. When we came out after games, we'd all stand around and talk with the people, and Sheila and I would greet them and whatnot, and all the players would. And when you went social, you stopped. The fans were part of it, and they're part of your family, and they felt part of it. And now it sort of discourages me a little bit when I see the rules that the NHL has to put in place and put them in place where the players can't be with them, et cetera, et cetera. And they've made so many laws and rules that you lose that feeling. You lose that camaraderie. And I'll tell you what made it come home to, we have this deal, and Willie, you've been in on it, you and Chris Mason and what, and Brent Peterson, where they sell, each year they auction off a meeting in the dressing room, a meal, a dinner, and a real first-class dinner, by the way, with our chefs there. In the dressing room, the team will be on the road, they'll clear, it'll be all nice and that, and Brent and I and a pizza round, and you have like, I think maybe 10 people come to it. And we've done a couple, and it's the greatest fun night. They bring the kids with them or them. We watch a game that's on the road. You guys are on the road, Willie, and we listen and watch. And they ask questions. We give them play-by-play. We answer all of them. It's one of the best things we do, but it brings back old-time memories for me of when you were close and could get close and could buddy up without problems or whatever. And I think that's a big part of the sporting world.
I've watched a lot of these older games. If you look at NHL Network, they've been showing a lot of the classic games that decide the Stanley Cup. And I really enjoy going back and watching the old games, watching how the game has evolved. So, Crispy, a lot of people always point to, you know, the fact that there was a lot of fights. I mean, your guys, the Broad Street Bullies, we know all of the great stories there. But when you watch an old game, what do you appreciate about the way the game was played back then? What's something that jumps out to you besides the toughness, the fighting? Is there anything that you think is almost a lost art these days?
Yeah, I do, but you're going to think I'm crazy. You think I'm going to be crazy and do it. But I think the new rules in our game have taken away a lot of our game. And I know people say, well, we wanted to get faster. We wanted to get more movement. We wanted to get more goals scored. We wanted more of this and more attack and all. You name it, and they'll throw that out at you. But back then, you were allowed to play. You don't have the ticky-tacky calls they have now when a guy reaches and taps a guy on the stick or the glove hand with a tap and he gets 2 minutes for it. I know the ref has to call it. It's in the rule book. But I think we've almost put rules and ruled ourselves out of what hockey was meant to be. And hockey is a contact sport. It always has been, and I hope always will be. But legally, legitimately. But you're going to get hit, and you're going to give hits and receive hits. And in today's game, I know they're faster, the athletes today. They're faster and stronger and quicker and whatnot. But still, I wish that there was not so many penalty calls that are calling to take away the body work, legal body work, good solid hits and whatnot. And that's when I watched that last game there, I thought, oh, man, if the referees today, we'd all be in jail. I mean, we'd have been just handcuffed, taken out and gone, and you'd end up.
Yeah,
game.
And you're not talking about fights, right? You're talking about just what they allowed one-on-one to go on, right?
And grab them and roll them and tackle them and whatever it took back then. Yeah, that was what was hockey. Not that the fans loved, and they came to see it was whatever. I just think today's game, it's a beautiful game, a wonderful game. But when I watched a few of those games when we played the Bruins And the funny part is, they all say the Broad Street Bullies, meaning the Philadelphia Flyers. Back in that era, nobody seemed to call the big, bad, brawling Bruins, who were just as miserable and just as mean as Philadelphia was, but never seemed to get the notoriety that we did.
Now, I want to get you to tell this story, Crispy. I'm not going to have you mention the name of the player unless you want to, but this is a great Crispy story that I've heard to me that kind of spells out what kind of guy Crispy is. Tell the story, Crispy, about you could get along with anybody on your team, and you felt like there was a conspiracy that they would stick you with the same roommate every time on the road, and it was a guy that had some personal habits of smoking and stuff that maybe nobody else wanted to room with, but they knew you were nice enough to be able to get along with the guy. Tell that story.
I will. It was one of the I loved him. Big, strong guy. That's why I loved him, because on the ice, he's big, strong, miserable, and he was my protector. So nobody got near me, and I made sure. But anyway, he loved to smoke. And back then, guys smoked. This is unbelievable. But I tell people, we had guys in our teams that would go in between periods, would go in the bathroom, have a couple cigarettes, come back out, and go on the ice. I mean, good players. They weren't stumble bums. And this was one of them. But he would smoke, and I'd be as... When I room with him, he'd get up like 6:30 in the morning and open the window and sit there, puff away on a cigarette and watch Popeye cartoons on TV. the guy said, we're not rooming with him. And he was my buddy, so I didn't mind rooming with him. So every road trip, Freddie said, okay, you put the names in a hat, because he wanted all the guys to mingle and wanted all the guys to be, you know, get to know each other. And that way on the road, you didn't have the same roommate. You had different roommate, which was smart. But every time when they'd pull a name out and they'd say, okay, Clarky. And then they'd pull out Kinderchuk. Okay, Clarky and Kinderchuk, your roommates for this road trip. And they'd go on down the line doing that. And about halfway, they'd pull out one, Crispy. And they'd pull out my buddy's name, Bingo. They say, your roommates. And he came to me. He says, hey, Crispy, huh? It's unbelievable, isn't it? It's crazy. We're always picked together, and we're always roommates. That's unbelievable. I said, yeah, it's really, it's unbelievable. You never knew our names were never in the hat. We never made the hat. But I loved him, and he was great. So, but that's how sports goes. We never made the hat.
Can you believe that, Terry? Again? How did we do this?
Believe it,
it's amazing.
Unbelievable.
It's like it was meant to be.
Crispy, Terry Crisp with us. I told these guys yesterday that how I have my music set up on my phone when I'm driving around in the car, it's just a lot of times I listen on shuffle, and when I try and pull something up on my computer, it automatically adds it to my music. So the other day I'm out and I'm running some errands, and Pete Weber likes to send me things to listen to from over the years, different radio calls. And I'm driving along, and you know, music's on, and then it goes to the next song, and all of a sudden I hear you tell me something about Cale Hulse that I didn't know, trying to break down a play. And when I did, you know what I'm talking about, soccer.
I know exactly. Pete loves that one. That is
Pete Weber's, his favorite.
Bubba's favorite story, and it's when we're not on the air now, it comes out. It's humorous, but it's so humorous that we took the headsets off, and all you could hear over the air was the sound of blades. We couldn't get it under control. And it's just one of those faux pas you have where it wasn't really terrible, but it was a little bit of a censored word, and it just popped out of nowhere. And thank God we were allowed then the odd mistake, and they forgave you, and you moved on, and you apologized and moved on. But it still is funny. Pete and I, to this day, we look at each other. When that one pops up, we start to giggle.
So I did a story last year for our Preds profiles where we were talking about how you and Pete got here and that all came to be. And I set it up with sometimes when you're doing live radio, and this – or live TV, it happens that you have a misspeak. You're trying to say one thing, but something else comes out, and that's what this situation was. You were breaking down the play, because at the time, people may not remember, you simulcast, so it was on TV and radio all at the same time, and so you're having to do it for both, that you have the video on TV, but you have to be descriptive enough that it translates over radio. So the puck had gone into the corner, and Cale Hulse is trying to clear it, and you're trying to say that he soccer kicked it, and another word came out.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's one of those legendary stories. But how many of those moments can you recall that you can actually say on radio have happened that created some of that chemistry between you and Pete?
A few of them, but you know, like some were harmless, thank God. Like when Dan Hamhuis first joined us. And the play was going on, and he made a pass, and I said, well, that damn Hamhuis. And Pete says, no, Petey. No, Crispy. I think he's okay. He's not a bad guy. And I meant to say, Dan Hamhuis. I said, that damn Hamhuis. Pete says, no, Crispy, it's okay. He's a nice guy. We like him. Okay. And Pete one time, and this is, I hope, I don't know if you're allowed to say the SH word, and he, one of our defensemen took a shot, and his stick just exploded, the stick, when he took the shot. And Pete says, holy, he says, so-and-so's, you know, the other word is rhymes almost with sticks, is, oh, he says, his bingo just exploded. And I looked at him and said, really? Hey, that's a mess. So there's certain cover-ups that we've had that Pete and I have got away with and done it. And you guys know, you guys better than anybody, Pete Weber has all of these on tape. So don't ever get Pete Weber mad at you.
No.
Because he can bury you in a hurry.
Oh, I send him stuff. Or he'll hear it and he'll text me. He goes, I need that. I need that for my reel.
He has got that forever and a day. They're on. He has the best collection of faux pas. And like that Elia guy in baseball, the one in when the one with the guy throws the phone, the baseball guy. Those baseball guys are a little demonstrative, aren't they? They're a little expressive. Holy.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Yes, they were.
Yeah, if I want to jump up and down and hug my players, I'll jump up and down and hug my players.
Tommy Lasorda.
You guys,
there's a whole reel just by itself for Tommy Lasorda.
You guys have heard them all. Most of the sports fans have.
And what people don't realize, you and Pete, I guess, you had crossed paths, but you didn't really know each other before you came here, right?
Well, yeah, Pete said he had interviewed me once before, and I didn't remember it. He says he did. So I said to him, well, then you must have been a poor interviewer, Pete, because I don't remember you. He says, you know, like he gave me like, yeah, okay. I guess when I was coaching, But when I got to sit down beside him, when I first came, I'll say this with all due and sincere respect, is that I was probably the luckiest broadcaster in sports to be able to sit down beside Pete Weber. As you all know, and the fans probably know, he has a photographic memory for every sport, everything. Like the three men, I'm going to give this, I'm going to give a shout out, I'm allowed. Three of the men that I have worked with that are unbelievable at this, that if I ever had to pick, it'd be one of these three every time. Pete Weber, Eli Gold, and Willie Donick are the three men that I listen to, I've worked with, that have memories that are unbelievable in the sporting world and can recall stuff, not in just one sport, but all the sports. So if people are listening to broadcasters and whatnot, yeah, a lot of them are great and good, but if you want three of the best that I've ever heard, it's Petey, Eli, and Willie that you talk sports with. You'll get everything you want to know from them.
Walking encyclopedias.
Yeah, thank you very much. I love that. That's why you get paid the big green, Darren.
And by the way, if Pete ever comes out with a book, we're all going to feel like another individual that we all know when Eli came out with a book. We'll be on pins and needles.
Oh, yeah.
Hotel rooms.
I love one. You guys know Bobby Plager, St. Louis Blues.
Oh, yeah.
I played with Bobby. One of the funniest guys, most dangerous guys for jokes and hockey. And he said, he sends out an email, I think, to all the guys in the Blues one time. He says, "Hey, guys, I'm writing a book, and I'm going to tell it like it was. And I'm no holds barred." And he said, "I'm going to get a lot of money for this book. But," he says, "being a good teammate, I'm giving you guys a heads up. If each of you guys sends me $25,000 each, I won't write the book."
That sounds like a Ponzi scheme.
I'm not sure how much money he got.
That is a great story.
That was one of the best ever.
Oh, that is a fantastic story. There's the walk-off.
Only Bobby Plager.
No doubt. Hey, Terry, thanks as always. Good to hear your voice. You and Sheila continue to be safe, and hopefully we'll see you soon, but we'll certainly talk to you soon.
Thanks, fellas, for talking with me. And, yes, back to you too, guys, your families. You all stay safe and healthy. And to all of our fans and the people out there, please stay healthy and stay apart, and we will get through this, and we'll see you all at the rink. Bye for now.
Love it. Terry Crisp, the Hall of Famer, will come back, wrap up the first hour. By the way, Austin Watson at 11 o'clock to start the second hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Austin Watson coming up at 11 o'clock here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. Elliot Friedman from Sportsnet, his weekly chat with us at 1. So those are some things on tap. Great conversation there with Terry Crisp. The Titans have been busy since we've been off the air. They've made a couple of signings. We had the general manager, John Robinson, on Monday's show, and he was yesterday on NFL Live rocking a Quebec Nordiques shirt, which was pretty cool. But they have signed a guy on offense and a guy on defense. They signed veteran guard Zach Karen to a one-year contract. Karen's a 6'5", 305-pound guard who has played 18 games in the NFL, including two of them being starts. And that he's been with Minnesota, Detroit, the Giants, Atlanta, and Washington. So it sounds like a journeyman offensive lineman. He played college ball at Toledo. He was a three-year starter and where he was an all-conference player. But the other one that got a lot of people's attention was yesterday afternoon, and it was a guy in the secondary. So what do you guys think of Jonathan Joseph now being a part of the Titans, and what does that mean? I feel like there's a little bit more to that signing. This guy is just a depth guy, but Jonathan Joseph, he's a guy who's been around the block. In fact, he's been around a long time. The first thing I said to you guys in a group text is, how old is he? Is he 40 yet? He's not quite. He just turned 36.
36, though, that's up there. That is an interesting move. And this guy's had a lot of success, you know, for people that don't, you know, don't follow it too closely. This guy's been around, as you said. He's done a lot of good things. A couple times to the Pro Bowl. I'm trying to remember. Is he the guy that blitzed and broke Jake Locker's collarbone back in the day? Was that him on that blitz?
That's popped into my mind.
That is a good question. It was definitely against the Texans in Houston. And well, it was in Houston, right, when he got blown up?
It was in Houston, yeah. There was a missed assignment, or, you know, whoever, I don't know what went down. We were doing the player show at the time, Darren, and asking mm-hmm. all those questions, how that works. You know, whether he should have slid the protection a certain way, maybe he just didn't make the right call. But I think it was Jonathan Joseph. It may not have been. They came flying in off the corner and just lit up Jake Locker, and that put him on the shelf for a good while.
I don't remember, but now that you say that, I am starting to think that is true. That would have been – what year was that?
I want to say it was whatever year Ryan Fitzpatrick, I think, was the guy that came in and took
13,
over. So
maybe
2012 or 2013?
Yeah.
I'm trying to look it up.
So what do you guys make as we look that
up? We'll see if we can find that. I don't know if that's in the – we could probably find that in the play-by-play if we find the right game. But does this – I think the question everybody's going to ask is what does this mean for Logan Ryan, probably Jadeveon Clowney? Where does this fit in the puzzle of what they have? I would imagine it wasn't a very expensive signing, and I don't know that they've released the financials on it yet, have they? But it's a one-year deal. It can't be – for a 36-year-old, that can't be something that breaks your bank, for sure.
I have not seen any numbers attached to it.
I haven't seen that either, because I don't think the team has officially announced it.
No, the team has not.
So, I haven't seen what numbers. It just – he was texting everybody.
Everybody who covers the Titans and the Texans, and then everybody on a national level has all confirmed that. Apparently, he was texting everybody in the media that he had signed with the Titans.
Yeah, that was where it – because I saw that Diana Russini had it, and then,
weren't they all like saying the same thing?
Yeah, they were all saying, and it's like, who's he texting? Is he texting everybody? Did he just send a group text?
Maybe so.
Which maybe that – yeah, I mean, that could be.
Do you remember, Willie, if that game was – I kind of feel like it was 12 because –
I'm looking up. I see the play now.
I think it was 2012 because Glover, they fell
Quinn.
Apart in that game, correct?
Oh, so it was Quinn. It wasn't.
It was who?
If I've got this right, Glover Quinn.
Okay, so it was not him.
Yep.
Was that 2012?
That was – well, it was – and Matt –
I feel like
Hasselbeck,
the game –
it was 2012, September 30th, 2012.
Yeah, okay,
and
that's
Matt
the game.
Matt Hasselbeck was still here, I think.
Yeah, okay, so 2012, that would have been Hasselbeck's last year.
I remember the game getting away from them, and they got clobbered. So that's why I was trying – that was helping me with the years, because the 2013 year in Houston was an overtime loss, and 2012 they got trounced. And I remember that game getting completely sideways.
Yeah, I'm watching the play right now. It was not pretty.
So it was not Joseph.
Nope. Glover Quinn.
Okay. Good memory. I didn't even think about that when they signed him. But don't – obviously he's got the ties to Mike Vrabel. We can connect that dot.
And that seems to be a theme as of late.
Even though, once again, as we talk about, they haven't officially announced stuff, he is the defensive coordinator, right? So he's going to probably try to surround himself with players that he knows.
Remember Bill Parcells and Bill Belichick, they used to do that all the time. Bill Parcells was the first guy that I can remember. When he went from the Giants to retirement and then came back with the Patriots, there were a bunch of ex-Giants that he brought in there. You know, and he did the same thing when he went from the Patriots and then came back with the Cowboys. There were some expatriates he brought over there. So it makes sense, because he has in mind, I'm sure Mike Vrabel does, on how he wants to run things. He knows the personnel he's got. He knows what they do well. And he wants to bring other people in that he knows can play a specific role. And so Jonathan Joseph, I would guess, would be one of those guys. He's been with Houston since 2011. He goes way back with them. He started his career in Cincinnati. He played 5 years with Cincinnati before he ever got to Houston.
I like this as a locker
14
room
years in the league.
You know, I know you can't build your entire roster with locker room guys. I mean, they actually have to do something, and he probably has a little bit left in the tank, but I like it just from with a young cornerback room that you bring in a veteran that you've lost with Logan Ryan now gone. I think having him in there is going to be good. So I like it. I need to see the money, but I like it, you know, from that
standpoint.
I'm
sure it's going to be very reasonable.
If it's a one-year deal, I don't know if it's minimum, but it's probably
– Well, but a minimum for a guy, you know, at his age is still a pretty decent price.
Yeah. So I don't think it's bad.
I here's another question I want to know. I wonder if he's – what's his relationship with Clowney?
That's
no hoax.
Right?
You know what college he went to?
Who, Joseph?
Yeah.
He goes to South Carolina?
He did.
Yep. Yeah, I actually, now that you've said that, I believe I've seen somewhere they're pretty close.
Isn't that interesting?
But I know we have Austin Watson on hold. So.
Isn't that interesting?
Is he? All right, we'll come back. Austin Watson to start the second hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase. That's next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.